This is Betsy McFarland. I'm the creator of the Color of Gone Fine Awareness Jewelry for cancer conquerors like myself. But I am also proud to be the daughter of the late, great Spanky McFarland, ringleader of the Little Rascals and the Our Gang comedies. Today, I'm talking with the good Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Oh, shalom, shalom, damn it. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I want to talk just for a moment about one of the scourges of our society. Gangs. Terrible gangs. They control the prisons. They do terrible. The stabbing and the knifings and the killings and the Nazis and the swastikas. There was only one good gang that I can think of in the whole history of that organization, and that would be our gang. These were little adorable children, almost none of them Jewish, but they were still adorable, and they did silent movies, and then they grew up a little bit, and then they did the sound movies in the 30s and the early 40s, the talkies, happy little short films about these children doing cute things, getting, with a cute teacher, Mrs. Crabapple, or Apple Tree, whatever the hell her name was. We love them, we remember them from Saturday morning television. Well, most of them are gone, including some of the leaders, the Stymie and Alfalfa and Spanky McFarlane. Remember Spanky? He was a little bitty baby when he first joined the group in the 1930s and then became kind of the leader of our gang, later known, of course, as the Little Rascals. Well, I'm a little rascal myself, ladies and gentlemen, because I have with us on the telephone this Saturday morning the daughter of the one and only Spanky McFarland. Her name is Betsy McFarland. She's been a business person, an entrepreneur, and she's very much involved in keeping the legacy going of our gang, the Little Rascals, and her dad, Spanky. Shalom, Betsy!
Shalom, Rabbi Saul. How are you today?
Oh, I don't know. I have all sorts of aches and pains, but basically I'm okay. How are you?
Well, I have made some things myself, but, you know, I could talk about them all day, but I'll do that with my mother later on.
Wait, your mom is alive?
Yes, my mother is alive and well. She is a beautiful 85 years old. She is a breast cancer conqueror as of this past March and is just the sweetest thing you have ever met in your entire life. She's about 5 foot nothing now, but
well,
she is just the sweetest thing. And if you don't believe me, ask her. And if you don't believe her, she'll whack you with her cane.
Now, your mother was married to Spanky for how many years?
They were married for, Rabbi, you're going to make me do math.
Yes, I am.
Oh, my goodness. They got married in 55, and Daddy passed in 93. So if you can do the math for me, then there we go.
Almost 40 years.
Almost 40 years, yes.
Wow, that's so... Did she ever remarry, or was one Spanky enough?
You know, one Spanky was enough. She's always said that he was the love of her life.
Oh.
We've tried to get her to date, and she says she has two requirements for a man in her life. She says, first, he must be able to drive at night, and... I'm not even going to tell you what the second one is, but...
Oh, no, you're kidding me.
Suffice it to say that my mother, in her golden years, has loosened up a little bit, so...
Good Lord, what is there a secret compartment in her cane for batteries? I wonder. Don't know about this. This is... Well, wow. Okay.
Huh. She's just delightful.
I see that. And you, thank God, I mean... when we say you're the daughter of Spanky McFarland, it's not as if, A, he birthed you and then went off somewhere else, or that he died when you were very, very young. You knew him until your 30s, right?
Oh, absolutely. My dad was my best friend. He and I were altogether too much alike, and consequently, we would butt heads once in a while.
But over what?
Over anything. This is an opinion. Especially when I was younger and wanted to do stupid things. And he was very adamant that my brother and I not do stupid things. So he would not hesitate at all to tell us if we were being foolish.
Well, what's an example of something that you, at that age, felt you wanted to do that he put his foot down?
Well, I'll tell you what the big one was.
Okay.
Rabbi, and this for me is a very, very important was in my 30s. I had never been married before. I was moving in with a man without benefit of marriage.
Oh, my God.
And, oh, I know.
You whore!
I know. And he just didn't like that idea at all. We discussed it. Daddy and I didn't fight over things. We just had very serious discussions about things. He tried 3 or 4 times to get me to change my mind, and it's something that I had thought through and had decided was the right thing for me, as he had taught me to do. Our father taught us to think through way down the line on things, you know, not just what will this do for me today, but what, you know, what will happen later on.
Let me ask a question before you continue on that. Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Was his objection to living in sin with somebody, or he just not like the guy and didn't want you to get more involved with him, be it marriage or living together?
I have no idea.
Oh. It wasn't clear on... Okay, all right.
I really have no idea.
Okay.
He always said it was because he didn't think I needed to live with someone without benefit of marriage. Daddy was a strong believer in traditional marriage. That was the reason he gave me. I have to assume that that's what it was. But with my dad, there's just never any telling. He had another agenda, and just wouldn't share that part with me.
Did you end up moving in with the fella?
I absolutely did. I actually ended up marrying him.
Uh-huh. Well, did you marry him when Spanky was still alive or not?
No.
Ah, okay.
No. And believe it or not, my dad was so angry with me for being the woman he had raised me to be that he kind of quit talking to me for a while. He just didn't have much to say to me.
Huh.
And unfortunately, during that time period, he passed away.
Oh, my God.
And, oh, you know what? My mother did the same thing. My mother, to this day, I believe, is still concerned that has scarred me forever. And what I will explain to you and what I've tried to explain to her over the years is something that a very good friend of mine was able to verbalize for me. It was something I felt in my heart, but she was actually able to verbalize it for me. She said, who on earth would love you enough to get that mad at you over something that stupid?
Pretty much anyone on the freeway. You cut someone off in the wrong lane, somebody's going to blow your brains on the L.A. freeway. That man, anybody would. Sorry to burst your bubble there and send you into a terrible tailspin, but there you go.
But no, you know, it really did resonate with me, Rabbi, because she was right. My dad was upset with me because I truly had become the woman he had raised me to be, someone with a mind of my own, someone who could make decisions based on serious thought and an understanding of the consequences. Then I had to be willing to accept, you know, any negative consequences that came down the road. He taught me very well. Unfortunately for him, with respect to his 30-something-year-old daughter not doing what he tells her to right away, unfortunately for him, I made a decision he disagreed with. But nevertheless, I know that his concern was strictly for my well-being.
Oh, sure, but it's funny.
I will love him forever for that.
When we brought up the subject, I assume you're going to tell a story about when you were 15 or 12, a teenager doing something really stupid. You were 30, for crying out loud.
I was 30 for crying out loud.
So how long were you on? Was it a couple of years you were on the outs, or just a few months?
Oh, no, just probably about 6 months is all.
Did the marriage last?
No.
How long did it go?
The marriage, we were together for 15 years altogether.
Oh.
The marriage lasted for 7 years.
Okay.
How stereotypical is that?
Well, that's the thing. Do you feel now that your dad might have been right, or 7 years it was meant to be, but it wasn't meant to last?
No, I think there were other issues involved that Dad would have not had any sort of insight into.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not going to go there.
My father was an incredible judge of character, and he always said he liked him, but there were just other issues.
Fair enough. Have you remarried, or are you still, do you date? What's your situation these days?
You know, Rabbi, I am unmarried. I am so fortunate that I have so many dear friends that I'm able to spend time in the company of gentlemen when I so desire.
Uh-huh.
But, well, I just, you know, my father taught me what a gentleman should be and how a gentleman should act. I must tell you that I am so blessed to have several friends in my life that are true gentlemen, and if I need a date to go to a play or to a concert, I have but to call one, and there I have a fine-looking gentleman on my arm.
Whoa! So, are we talking gentlemen with benefits, or just basically, you know, peck on the cheek, night-night?
Well, now, Rabbi.
Oh, what? Oh,
I'm
come
not going to put anybody's stuff on the street, including my own.
But here's a question, though. When you have these gentlemen friends, or when you actually go on a date or something like that, are the men that you prefer like your dad, or completely the opposite, or that doesn't even factor into your thinking?
That's a great question.
Thank you. And
I could say that there's a good variety. For the most part, they are like my dad in the fact that they must be honorable. They must live an honorable life. Good work ethic is something that is so incredibly important to me. Not because I need anyone to support me, but because to me that is just so very telling about a person, is their work ethic.
And your dad's work ethic was...
That was hammered into us. It was an example that my dad lived. In that way, they have to be like him in that way. But that's not really a criterion that I put them up against. But, you know, I tell people, I tell my friends, my male friends who have daughters, I always tell them, you need to understand that you are the standard by which that little girl will judge every man that she meets from now on. Whether she judges that in a positive or negative way is entirely up to you. But just remember that you are the standard by which that little girl will judge every man that she meets for the rest of her life.
Well, I know. I mean, I have 21 and a half beautiful children. And boy,
oh, wow.
Being a mentor to them, 14 of them are already screwed up. The first 14, forget it. I didn't know what I was doing. 15 through 19, a little bit. I imparted them some moral values. And the problem with the rest of them is I'm already just too tired, so I'm letting them raise themselves, essentially. So it's difficult. The whole parenthood thing is very difficult. But let me ask you, Spanky McFarland, you know, you figure these days, these kids, they make a couple of movies when they're little teenagers, whatever, they're already set for life. They make $20 million a thing, they go on promotional circuits, boom, and they can do whatever the hell they want. They can run charities and stuff. Spanky, he finished doing the Our Gang comedies in the early 1940s, and then what? He had to become a businessman. It's not like he was independently wealthy at that point.
Exactly right. Daddy was paid very, very well for that era. In fact, there's a rumor that at one point he was the highest paid actor in Hollywood simply because they paid based on the number of films that you made. He made 95 some odd films.
Some were odder than others. Yeah.
That's a lot of movie making right there. So he made quite a bit of money at the time, but he was the family's sole source of income. There was a recognized standard that the studios held their stars to as far as their lifestyle was concerned. So very much of that money went to upholding that standard of living that was required of the stars. My grandfather was Dad's manager, and he'd never done anything like that before. And unfortunately, it was a bit of a stereotypical outcome to all of that. And when the movie days were over, they had to move back to Texas and move in with his mother's mother. And Daddy and his younger brother, Tommy, chopped wood to put in the wood-burning stove for wintertime.
Because, A, they were living in Texas, which is a hole, essentially, but, B, because the money was mostly gone.
Hey, Rabbi.
I'm kidding. It's Texas, for crying out loud. But then he started businesses. He ran... What did he do? What were some of the jobs that he took on?
Well, one of the things that he did, as soon as he was old enough, if he joined the Air Force, or I guess it was the Army Air Corps at the time, and was stationed in San Antonio, Texas.
This is post-war, or this is after World War II, or during?
During.
During, wow.
Right at the very end. He was in the Signal Corps, unfortunately, had to ask for a hardship discharge so that he could go to work and help support his mother and father. And
unfortunately? He was spared from going to Japan. What do you mean, unfortunately? Hardship my ass.
He loved the Air Force.
Oh, okay.
He loved being in the service. He said at one point, he said, I could have seen myself making a career of it.
Oh. Hmm.
So, yeah.
But then he came out, he had to work for the family at that point. Doing what?
Yeah. You know, he did several different things. There was a government contractor that was based in Dallas, Ling Temco Vought, or LTV, now known as Vought. I think now it's known as Triumph. I'm not sure. It's been through a lot of iterations.
Okay.
But he went to work there in the plant. I know he did that. Dad did just about anything that it took to make a living. And at one point, he decided he was going to go, this was in the 50s, he was going to go back to Hollywood. Now that he was a grown man, see if perhaps there weren't some roles for him.
Hmm.
But, you know, unfortunately, the good Lord decided that he really shouldn't grow much past 5'3", and he was still round-faced.
Well, he wouldn't have been a leading man, let's say, but he could have been a character actor at that point.
Exactly. Unfortunately, the studio system was still in place in the 50s, and they did not allow stars to do bit parts.
Oh.
And even though he'd been out of the movies for so long, he was still extremely recognizable as
Sure.
Mickey.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of a typecasting burden put on him at that point, and he really was not able to get any acting roles. So he, like other actors who were looking for work, he did different kinds of jobs. He worked for an ice cream factory out there.
Okay.
I know he supplemented his income at one point by going out and picking up bottles on the beach back when there was a deposit for glass bottles. Doing odd jobs like that.
Hey, can I ask how come he didn't wind up, if not behind the camera, then behind the scenes at the studios?
I don't know the answer to that, Rabbi.
Okay, because I know a couple of, when I watched a documentary about the Little Rascals, there were a few of them who wound up, you know, they didn't see them on screen anymore, but they were working in the design thing, or they were holding the boom mic or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, well, exactly. Buckwheat worked for Technicolor for years.
There you go, right,
and,
yeah.
Yes, and Darla made a living doing voiceovers. She was actually the original Chicken of the Sea Mermaid voice.
Whoa!
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, let's interrupt that there to ask, since we're bringing those up, how many of those folks did Spanky end up seeing and, you know, having lunch with or whatever in his adult life?
Well, I wouldn't characterize it as having a relationship that they would go have lunch together, but there were several occasions when they would get together for a quote-unquote reunion of some sort. Daddy and Darla appeared together on the Mike Douglas Show back in the 70s.
Wow.
There also used to be a show on late at night called Tonight with Tom Snyder.
Oh, sure, I remember that.
Back in the 70s, right.
Yeah.
And Tom actually did a reunion, and he had Dad and Darla and Steiny.
Wow.
And I think Buckwheat was there. You must understand that I was extremely young.
Sure.
I won't characterize exactly how young, but I was young. Leave it at that. And I believe that Porky and Butch may have been there as well. So over the years, Dad did get together with each of those members of the gang. Unfortunately, and don't hold me to the dates on this, but
sure.
1979, 1980, 1981, we lost Darla, Stymie, and Buckwheat, all within 3 years of each other. So,
can I ask, do you have any memories of meeting the other, our gang? Because you would have been either in your early to mid-teens. No, it's not as if you were a little baby child. Do you have any memories of any of these folks?
Well, I have very, very fond memories of meeting Stymie, because Dad and Stymie did get to be pretty good friends.
Uh-huh.
And Dad had his own celebrity charity golf tournament in Marion, Indiana for several years. And Stymie came to that a couple of times, so I got to know him there. Delightful human being.
Uh-oh.
Absolutely delightful human being.
And what did he end up doing again? Where did his career path go?
I don't recall exactly what he did for a career path, but I do know that at one point, and he was very open about this, so I'm not speaking out of school, Stymie became a drug addict.
Oh.
But then he also got clean and worked with Synanon, which is Anonymous equivalent for drug abusers.
That's right. There's a picture of him on the internets, the interwebs, where you see him in like an African dashiki, and he's looking really good and all cleaned up. That's right. He was the one. Wow.
A delightful human being, though. So sweet, so generous with his time for fans. Just a nice man. He was just a nice man.
That's wonderful to hear. Everybody thinks that we're always looking for dirt and bad stories and things. No, you want to hear that these people who were in the industry, who were famous, who were stars of a sort, did nice things and were lovely folks, you know?
Exactly. And the same can be said of both the gentleman who played Butch and the gentleman who played Porky. I knew them both in my late teens and early 20s. You know, they would get together with Dad for nostalgia conventions and things like that, and they were also very nice people.
So what was the transition there? Because we had left your dad making spare money by picking up bottles on the beach and returning them for, I guess, a nickel. How did that go from being a man who was secure enough to be now on the quote-unquote nostalgia circuit and having his own golf charity? No, seriously, something happened there.
There was about 10 years in between there. I would like to say that part of that was the blessing that he met my mother.
Oh.
And he met her in Dallas, which is Dad's hometown. Dad was born in Dallas, Texas, on October 2nd, 1928.
Wow.
He met Mother at a swim and tennis club in Dallas. I can't tell you if he decided it was time to really, you know, get down and dirty with it or whatever.
Well, I beg your pardon? No wonder your mother is the way she is.
I was referring to his career.
Oh, sure you were. Spank does have a double meaning. All right, so.
Well, you're exactly right. I've got to be careful with you, man. You're right on top of everything.
Oh, hell, well, so was he. But, you know, I don't even know what that means. All right.
21 and a half children. But he, in the 60s, I can at least speak for what he was doing in the 60s. He got a job as the little old winemaker for Italian Swiss Colony Wines.
Oh.
That was their trademark back then. But he was a salesperson for Italian Swiss Colony Wines in Oklahoma. And that was a tough sell in Oklahoma back then. Oklahoma had some very interesting liquor laws for a long time. But he was a liquor salesman for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then, in the early 60s, he found a building that would make a perfect barbecue restaurant. So he and Mother opened Spanky's Barbecue and had that until the property owner had to declare bankruptcy. Yes, exactly. But it was very, very popular. Mother tells stories of Neil Armstrong having come in, and, you know, other celebrities of the day, as they would go through Oklahoma, they would find out about Daddy's restaurant and go by. And to this day, Rabbi, we as the family will still make and can the barbecue sauce that they used, because it was just so incredible. People would come in and buy gallon jugs of it from Mom and Dad.
Wow.
We still make big vats of it about once every 5 or 6 years. And
but you don't sell it. You don't have, like, a niche market. It's just for you.
No, we don't sell it. We had thought about it at one point, and that doesn't mean we won't ever do it, but at this point, we're all pretty busy doing our own thing.
Sure.
So,
look, I'm still trying to make the leap there. Okay, I got a successful restaurant for a while,
right?
And then?
And then he had a a nightclub for a little while, wow. And I can't even tell you why that went away. But then he got a job with Philco Ford Corporation as a territorial salesman out of Oklahoma City. And he was with them for about 3 years. And for some reason, that sounds like it was magical. They recognized in him a talent, and they promoted him to National Sales Training Manager.
Ooh.
And that took us to Philadelphia, which is where Philco was based.
Oh, makes sense, yeah.
And,
otherwise, they would have called it
He lived there for 3 years while he did that.
And
during that time, there were a couple of gentlemen who were pretty much fresh out of college who heard that Spanky had moved to New Jersey. And how they found that out, I have no idea.
This is before, Google and classmates and all that.
Right, and Daddy really soft-pedaled the Spanky thing because it would kind of get in the way of work.
Mm.
If all people wanted to do was talk about him being Spanky, and they didn't want to talk about buying televisions from him, you know. So he was George for, 10 years. But these two gentlemen, Rick Sapphire and Ray Laub, a couple of good Irish boys, met him and decided that they wanted to take him on the road and do college appearances and also appearances at some of the resorts up in the Poconos. And they would show clips and, Daddy would just talk about what it was like back in the day and answer questions and sign autographs. And it became very, very popular.
I think that was the era of the beginnings of the nostalgia boom. I mean, you had between Joe Franklin and then Groucho Marx being hailed on college campuses. I think that there's something happened in that period of the 1970s where everybody recognized, oh, my God, we're going to lose all these people. Let's celebrate them while we have them and show the movies and hear what they have to say,
Exactly. I think there was also a lot of people in that era, the post-Vietnam days, where they were weary of all of the unrest and the anger and all of that, and when people get tired of that, or when that starts overwhelming them, just as humans, we tend to look back on the happier days of our lives. And boy, howdy, that was a combined title right there, the happier days of our lives. Wow.
Yeah. And what's ironic is, of course, that the Little Rascals and our gang kids, were in the middle of the Great Depression and were just into World War II. So there was nothing remotely happy about that era,
right,
unless you were physically in Hollywood making movies while the rest of everybody was starving.
And just, exactly.
Rose-colored glasses, as it were.
Mm-hmm. But as part of that, it was fairly inexpensive to go and spend the entire day at the movie theater, because once you were in, you were in. And the shorts that they would show between the main features were the Our Gang comedies and Red Ryder and Little Beaver and Sky King and
Little Beaver. What the hell was Little Beaver? I know we're on college radio, but we still have to be a little careful here. What on earth was that?
Well, it was Red Ryder and Little Beaver.
Oh, well.
One show, yes. And believe it or not, it was about a cowboy and a little Native American boy.
Oh, good
and
God.
And the Native American boy was played by a kid whose name was Mickey Gubitosi. And, he was playing a Native American kid.
Mickey Gubitosi.
We know him now as Robert Blake.
Oh! And wasn't he in the Our Gang also for a while?
Yes.
Robert Blake. We also
knew him as Mickey from the later Our Gang comedies. Absolutely.
Well, he certainly has had a successful career until,
Until, yeah.
Until. And Jackie Cooper was in the Our Gang. He was a more recognizable older actor, too. Anybody else who went on to later real note of all the 40 kids who were in there?
Well, there was Tommy Bond was Butch. There were a couple of others that did some other acting. Alfalfa, of course, did make the transition to a teenager in the movies.
Right.
He was in, I believe it was the, it wasn't the Backstreet Boys, that was.
I hope not.
That was a musical group.
Not the way he sang.
But he was in some of the later movies, you know, with again, gang kids, right, street gangs, but, you know, well before they became the horribly violent types of things that they are now.
Well, let me ask you, though, about speaking of violence, did your dad have any opinion on what actually happened with Alfalfa, where there was like a business deal gone bad, and suddenly, boom, he's dead?
Well, Dad's opinion of it is that it was a tragic loss.
Well, yeah, well, duh. But, I mean, would Alfalfa have been the kind to have had a knife or et cetera?
Yes. Well, and of course, Dad wasn't there, so he had to rely on some other accounts that had been provided to him. But apparently, Alfalfa and a business partner had a disagreement, and it got violent. You know, Dad used to say he took a knife to a gunfight, because from what we understand, he did have a knife at this argument and brandished it, and his partner felt like his life was being threatened, so he ended up shooting Alfalfa.
Yeah, now, I mean, that's the scuttlebutt on the webs, if you believe people. Some say Alfalfa didn't have a knife at all. Some people say, no, he did carry a knife. You know, it makes a big difference, obviously, but...
Well, it does, and, you know, unfortunately, on the web, there's so much information, and yet there is so much misinformation, that, you know, unless you were there, who knows what really happened.
Well, there's actually a very funny thing. There's people who post on some of these YouTube videos where one person will say, oh, that's not the real Spanky, it's a fake Spanky, and someone had to correct them and say, no, you moron, that is the real Spanky. However, Spanky was the guy who helped unmask the fake Buckwheat. Remember that?
Yeah, well, and he did do that, yes, absolutely.
Tell us about the fake Buckwheat scandal. I love this. I don't know, seriously, it's a fake Buckwheat scandal. It was wonderful.
Well, it was, I believe it was 2020, and they aired a segment about Buckwheat, and, you know, at the time, Daddy had known Buckwheat after those years, and they had those reunions and things, and Buckwheat had passed away at that point.
Right. And then this Schwarzer on drugs with a weird haircut comes on.
It was a little surreal, but Dad called, I believe it was ABC, and explained to them what was happening and that they had been taken. And it took a while, but they eventually fessed up and interviewed Dad about it and did a small retraction segment on it. So they did clear up the misinformation. I was very proud of the media for doing that.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, good for them. Good for them for doing that. Good for your dad for taking the reins on that and saying, oh, no, that he may be Schmuckwheat, but that's not our Buckwheat, you know?
That's
not the man I remember.
Exactly right.
So your dad must have, between the Philco job and then getting on the nostalgia circuit, he must have had a pretty comfortable last few years, yes?
Dad... we were never wealthy. Dad was never wealthy by any stretch of the imagination. But my brother and I never needed a thing as we were growing up. There were things that we wanted that we couldn't have. And in retrospect, I have no idea whether it was because Mother and Daddy couldn't afford it or because they felt like, you know, raising a child does not necessarily mean that they get everything that their little heart desires.
Right.
Kind of an old-fashioned philosophy of rearing children, and if you compare it to a lot of today's parents, but we were happy. We grew up in a nice home, in a nice area, and you know we had cars when we were teenagers. They weren't new cars; they were definitely used cars. But
you have a nice middle-class existence. You know, it's not as if Spanky was left for dead. You know, he had good jobs, good
absolutely.
Life.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
Yeah.
He was a very successful salesman.
Oh.
And when Philco Ford closed its doors, he went to work for Magic Chef Corporation, the manufacturer of kitchen appliances.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes, and he was very successful at Magic Chef for a very long time. And then in the mid-80s, there was an outfit here in Dallas that started a cable channel called the Nostalgia Channel. And the format was to show old movies and produce raps around them. For your audience who's not familiar with what a rap is, if you'll think of...
I can do a rap. I'm Rabbi Sal, and I'm talking to a gal. Her name is Betsy. Nothing rhymes with Betsy.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. It's that same kind of thing. And
she shops on Etsy. I don't know. What? Okay, yeah.
It's kind of like purple and orange. There aren't really words that rhyme.
They just don't. No, that's true. But by rap, right. You actually mean things that are on the beginning and the tail end of the clip they're going to show. So he sets it up and then he back announces it. Yeah.
Exactly. So they hired Dad, as much for publicity as anything else, which was a good move on their part. And I actually went to work for them for a while as a production assistant.
Oh, nice.
That was one of the better jobs I've ever had, or most enjoyable jobs, certainly. And we worked for them for a while, and then, things just didn't go so well with the channel, and we left there. And I kind of picked up where the two guys in Philadelphia had left off. Dad and I produced a college stage show for him to do, and I would book him into various colleges and universities. But at the same time, Rabbi, he was also playing in an enormous number of charity celebrity golf tournaments. He was very popular on that circuit. He loved to play golf. He wasn't a great golfer, but he was was always able to contribute to the team.
Now here's a question about that I've always wondered about these things. He's taking part in these charity things. Does he get a stipend? I mean, I'm sure he gets a free meal and transportation. Does he get paid for that?
No, he did not. Daddy fully understood the reason he was there. It was a charity event. It was intended to raise money for the charity. And if he asked for a stipend, that took money out of the coffers for that charity and took the benefit away from the beneficiaries. So he never asked for a stipend. Now, there were occasions where he said, I want to bring my wife, and, I need for you to pay her expenses.
Fair enough.
As a general rule, they paid the travel expenses of all of the celebrities who came in anyway. So that was never an issue. But, so it didn't take money out of Dad's pocket, but he didn't take money out of...
So it wasn't paid, but they tended to be free vacations for a weekend. So everything was covered,
exactly.
But he wasn't getting like a couple of $1,000 for being there. That's the difference.
Oh, heavens no.
Right.
No. Now, there were celebrities who did require a stipend, and that was their business. But Dad never did. And I think that was one of the reasons why he was popular with the event organizers. But he was also the guy who would stand there until... the greenskeepers were kicking him off of the golf course, signing autographs for anyone who wanted one. He was very generous with his time and his pen.
Did you ever join him on any of the, or visit any of these that he went to?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh. Had a blast. Are you kidding me? Chris Christopherson kissed me on my cheek on, I think it was my 28th birthday or
something. Oh, yeah. That was back in his hunky mode,
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. How about any other encounters with celebrities that you've had?
Countless. Absolutely countless.
Such as?
I am so fortunate. I was actually able to meet two United States presidents at one of the golf tournaments.
Wait, which one? Well, Nixon? Who?
No. I met President Ford and Bush 41 in Houston, at a golf tournament in Houston.
Any memories of it? Or you just, did they say anything? Did they do anything? Did Ford trip over your feet or something?
Hale, hearty, and well met. How do you do? Nice to meet you. Pictures with Dad, all of that. But, their Secret Service people were very very intent on getting them from point A to point B. Very politely. But
No, fair enough.
That was cool. That was really cool.
Yeah. What about other celebs?
Oh, my goodness. Who all have I met? Pick somebody in the country music world, and I probably got to meet them. There were a lot of tournaments. Country Western musicians, the Gatlin Brothers, Floyd Kramer, Boots Randolph, great saxophone player. Holy mackerel, that guy was awesome. Chet Atkins.
But do you have any, besides saying that you met them, do you have any anecdotes about them being really funny or sweet or assholes? That too.
Well, there was an astronaut that I met. He shall remain nameless. I'm not in the business of telling tales on specific people. But
wait, is he alive still or dead?
I believe he has passed.
So you can say whatever about him.
No.
He was a transvestite. He was stabbing people. He was like Jack the Ripper in space.
Mother and Daddy and I were at this tournament, and Daddy had said, "Would you like to meet this guy?" I was absolutely sure. So we went over and shook hands, and he was polite, and he was sitting at his table. And as we started to move on, someone stopped Dad. So I was stopped right there beside him, and the next thing I know, I feel his hand on my tuchus.
Whoa! Wait, how old were you?
Oh, I was in my mid to late 20s.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Yeah, and I, it's like, oh my gosh, in front of my mother? I don't think so.
Could you tell if the astronaut had liftoff?
I'm sorry?
Could you tell if the astronaut had liftoff? I don't know, I'm just wondering about that.
No, I didn't pay attention to that. I was too busy being mortified, and I just grabbed his wrist and removed his hand from my person and put his hand back in his general vicinity. I said, please don't do that again.
Maybe he was reaching for Spanky, and he got your tuchus instead.
He may have been.
Now, did this astronaut ever run for public office? I'm trying to figure out which one it was.
I don't think so.
Okay, so it's not who I... All right, so it's not one of them. All right, okay.
I don't think he ever did. I don't think he ever did.
Anyway,
so that was a great story. And another wonderful story for any of your listeners who may be familiar with this gentleman. We were at the Willie Nelson Daryl Royal Golf Tournament.
Ooh.
Outside of Houston 1 year. And we were sitting at the big gala, which was, these things were just amazing, the talent that would be on the stage for these galas at these tournaments. And we were sitting at the table. We were with Steve Gatlin and Rudy Gatlin, Larry's brothers that were in the group with him.
Okay.
And a couple of other individuals. And there were two empty seats. So just as the music gets ready to start, these two guys come walking in. They're, young, in their 20s. And as they walk up, Steve Gatlin stands and introduces everybody around. And these two guys, very polite, almost painfully cordial, actually kind of bowed, to Mother and myself, being the only ladies at the table that I recall. And sat down, and we ate our barbecue, and they were so quiet. They really didn't say anything. About 20 minutes into the show, they stand up and ask my mother to be excused, basically.
These aren't the Tsarnaev brothers, are they? Who is this? Okay.
Well, it was grand because they walked away, and Daddy leaned over to Rudy Gatlin and said, "Who's the dude with the funny hair?"
Yeah.
And Rudy said, "Spank, that guy's name is Lyle Lovett."
Oh.
And he's getting ready to perform. And he's like, "No one you've ever heard before. We're backing him. And you will hear about him. He is going to be huge."
Well, whatever happened to him? No, just kidding.
But the other gentleman with him was his cellist. And when they got up to perform, it was just Lyle with his guitar and his cellist. And the show was absolutely wonderful. They had people on their feet. He was very new on the large scale scene. He'd been, he and and his buddy Robert Earl Keen had been playing around for, not playing around, had been playing around Texas.
Gotcha.
For, you know, years and years. But that was one of those very remarkable moments, for sure.
Wonderful. We are talking, by the way, with Betsy McFarland. We spent so much time talking about Betsy and her dad, Betsy's dad, Spanky, 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 Spanky. But you have had a life apart from your papa. So I've got to ask, what do you do? What have you been doing for the past bunch of years?
Well, Rabbi, my professional life is, you know, we talked about my marriage. But my professional life has been primarily in the marketing, public relations, journalism world.
Oh, okay.
Until very recently. And I was laid off back in November, the same week that my dear mother, was diagnosed with breast cancer. And it was a blessing. It truly was a blessing.
The layoff, not the breast cancer.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
The layoff was.
And by the way, did you say your mother's cancer free? Her boobies are good?
Yes, they're great. She and I'm gonna talk about this simply because, and she won't be. I don't think she'll be embarrassed for me to say this, but my 85-year-old mother still does her monthly breast check self exam, and she's the one who found it.
Wow.
So I'm telling your listeners right now that it doesn't matter how old you are or how young you are, check those boobies.
You know, that is so important and so true. In fact, I volunteer my services to any woman within listening range. If you're not sure how to do this, if you don't want to do it yourself...
You're a man of God, Rabbi. You're a man of God.
I am. Because when I do it, I say, oh, God, oh, God. So if you need your boobies checked, I will do that for you. I have soft hands. I have a warming towel so that you don't jump up to the ceiling when I touch you. Anytime. Just give me a call. Or drop me an email. ShalomDamick@AOL.com, and I will be there as soon as I can. Believe me.
What a giving human being you are. we're blessed to have you.
Did I see somewhere that you are also a survivor?
I am. I am. Well, actually, Rabbi, I call myself a cancer conqueror.
Oh.
Because to me, the word survivor kind of implies, you know, just hanging on for dear life. And there are people whose cancers require that of them. That is absolutely the best they can do because they're just so ravaged by the disease. I was fortunate. My cancer was stage 3B, but I got the greatest team on the planet, and I fought it. I kicked its ass. I kicked its tuchus.
It took us, right?
And,
was it also the boobs, or was it somewhere else?
You know, this segues beautifully into what I'm doing now, Rabbi.
Ah.
I have the kind of cancer that is now gone.
Lullaby, knock wood, toy toy, but...
Unless you're my personal physician, you will never know what kind of cancer I had, because
okay.
You know what? It's already had enough of my life. It's had enough of my mental energy. It doesn't even deserve a name in my universe anymore.
You could call it Shmuel, you know.
I'm sorry?
You could call it Shmuel or Yitzchak, if you wanted to give it a name. Bertha.
A friend of mine said, well, it's like Spilkus in your connectivoid.
Oh, I like your friend. Wait, there are Jews in Texas? Anyway.
So, or the epizodiacal diabostolutions of the Lumpuckaroo. It's, you know, it was one of those, and your listeners can choose which one they like.
But how does that dovetail into what you are doing now as a career?
Because and there's a very long story behind it that I won't bore you with, but I have designed a line of fine jewelry for other cancer conquerors that I call the color of gone, because I no longer have cancer. I don't need to wrap myself in a blue blanket or a pink blanket or a green blanket or a yellow blanket or whatever color, you know, has been designated.
You know what's funny? At night, when I go to bed at night, I wrap myself in a white blanket, and when I wake up in the morning, it's a yellow blanket. So that's rather sad on my part.
They make special products for you, Rabbi.
Yes, they do. So this jewelry, what kind of jewelry is it?
But the jewelry is intended to be worn every day by the cancer conqueror. Every piece of it has the word gone to remind them that they beat that cancer. Whatever it was, they won. They are the victor. It is the vanquished. And it is something that has helped me for the last 3 years to help quell that fear that every cancer survivor lives with for the rest of their life, that it will come back. I don't fear that. I know that my cancer is gone. And I'm trying to share that with other survivors.
Well, let me ask you a question, though. Do you, every, whatever it is, 6 months, a year, whatever, do you go for a checkup to...
I do, on the proper schedule. And as survivors go along, those scheduled checkups become further and further apart.
Right, yes.
I'm now on a once-a-year schedule for a scan. And I'm so happy about that. That was big news on year three for me.
Well, hell yeah.
This year. And, you know, for most people, those times are extra stressful.
Sure.
Because, like, oh, my gosh, are they going to find something, you know, what have you. And I get excited because I get to go see my doctor and, you know, my oncologist and find out where he's taking his sailboat lately and, you know, and visit with him. I don't fear those checkups anymore because I put on my Gone Awareness bracelet every single day. And when I do, I say a little prayer of thanks, not just to God for my health, but to God for all of the people and all of the things that those people did that made that cancer gone.
Nice.
And that is a twice daily affirmation for me because I do it when I put it on, I do it when I take it off at night.
Now you are still making and selling this jewelry. In fact, you've got a brand new website, which hopefully is up now that we're airing. It's thecolorofgone.com is the website, is it?
Yes, it is. It is thecolorofgone.com, G-O-N-E.com. And yes, we are literally standing the business up right now. And by the time you air this, people should be able to go online and look at our designs and hopefully see the value in them as I do. And order them. They will be available for purchase. I have men's designs and women's designs, and I even have anniversary pendants that commemorate those very important years of 1, 3, and 5 in a survivor's journey.
Let me ask, what's the materials? Is it silver? Is it gold? Or is it natural rocks?
We use sterling silver, and we use gold. We use different hardness of gold for different applications. For instance, our bracelets are only 10 karat gold because they get a little more wear and tear, you know, being on the end of someone's arm, whereas a necklace is basically out of harm's way. So we use 14 karat for the necklaces. But anything can be ordered in sterling, virtually anything, not everything, but most of our items can also be ordered in sterling. I do have a woman's bracelet design that is made of sterling simply because cancer wipes out a lot of people's finances. I was truly blessed and was able to keep my job, and I had great insurance, and I had an Aflac cancer policy that paid beautifully. So a little plug for Aflac there.
Aflac! I've been mad at them ever since they fired Gilbert Gottfried. I have not forgiven
and
them.
And me both. He was awesome.
He is the only duck in my book.
We have different price points for different people's budgets. I because I don't want someone to be left out just because this nasty, nasty disease has decided to take their money away from them. So I tried to make sure we had items that could be, you know, affordable yet durable, and or that you know, friends and family could, pitching $15-$20.
Now, let me ask you something. As someone who has been in journalism and marketing for the past few years before you lost that other job, is how are you going to go? So, great, you've got a website, you're trying to get on these radio shows and stuff. How are you going to market this to make it a business and career? How are you going to grow? Are you going to go on, try and go on QVC or something? What are you going to do?
Right now, this is perfectly suited for social media. I am of an age where I'm having to hire college students to help me learn how to tweet.
Good point.
It is a business that is perfectly suited. suited for marketing through social media. Again, as you said, I'm trying to get on radio shows and TV shows and in magazines to make people aware of the business. But there is so much that entrepreneurs can do now with social media to help drive their sales without, having to go the old-fashioned route of, knocking on doors or showing up at trunk shows or what have you.
Right.
And it's just magical what social media has done for marketing and sales in our economy these days.
Now, speaking of marketing and sales, and last question or two for Betsy McFarland, who has been so much fun and so delightful to talk to. This is sort of bridging the gap between you and what we were talking about before, your famous dad. I assume there's materials. There is nostalgic stuff, keepsakes, pictures, photographs, maybe even film footage, canisters, autographs, whatever it is, that legacy. Where is that, and have you made plans to do, I don't know, what with a museum, a thing, a museum of radio and TV, what?
Well, the family has quite a bit of memorabilia spread out through the various family members. And Mother doesn't have much of that anymore simply because she does live alone. She is, and these are her words, a little old lady. And, we wouldn't want anyone taking advantage of her getting into the house somehow and taking that from her.
Sure.
So she has a few things, that are memorable for her. And the rest of it has been spread out throughout the family. We have not necessarily made any efforts to sell it or can it or whatever, because frankly, most of those things are studio stills that we don't own the rights to.
Oh.
So reproducing and selling them would be something completely different. However, Rabbi, mm-hmm. This may be of interest to your listeners. The family and some wonderful production people here in the Dallas area, we are currently in the middle of producing a documentary about Spanky McFarland.
Oh.
Not just Spanky the little boy, because as you mentioned earlier, you've seen documentaries about the Our Gang and what have you, but
about the whole span of Spanky's life, yeah.
Exactly. About the man he became and how he got there and the legacy that George Robert Phillips Spanky McFarland left, not just to the family, but also to the world. We're probably 3/4 of the way through taping. We've got to go out to California very soon. There are several people out there we want to talk to. Hopefully we get to talk to Tito Jackson. Daddy and Michael Jackson were actually very good friends.
And, whoa.
Yeah, I know.
What? Yeah, your father and Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Who was at what age? Because your dad was a full-grown man by that point, so.
Absolutely. Apparently, Michael was a huge, huge Little Rascals and specifically a Spanky fan. And they met at the Academy Awards out in California, and I think it was 85. It may have been 84. And Michael's personal assistant came over and asked if her employer could have his picture taken with Spanky. And Daddy, they were in the middle of dinner, and Daddy's standard line was, absolutely, after you let me finish my dinner.
Well, okay, fair enough.
So she said, oh, absolutely, we just wanted to make sure we didn't miss you. And she didn't say who it was. So after dinner, here she comes again, trailed by Michael Jackson.
Whoa.
And Dad, had kind of a peripheral knowledge of Michael, but Michael didn't play Daddy's kind of music. Daddy was a Dixieland jazz fan. And that just wasn't, a big part of his universe. But, he watched the news and the Johnny Carson show, so he knew of him. And Michael comes over and, thanks him, may I please have my picture taken with you? And I'll be darned if Daddy does not start lecturing Michael Jackson about who else he's sitting at the table with. And, don't you want to have your picture made with these people, too? My God, I'm sitting here with Hal Roach, the producer of The Little Rascals, and Laurel and Hardy. Don't you want to have your picture
made
with them? Michael's like, oh, absolutely I do. Oh, sure. And again, Daddy, I don't think Daddy had a full understanding of
the enormity of Michael Jackson's career at that point.
Exactly.
Did you meet Michael Jackson?
Absolutely. He came out to Mother and Daddy's and stayed two separate times.
And
he was a delightful human being. Very, very kind, very gentle, very soft-spoken.
Did he seem normal?
No, because if you grew up in that situation, you would not be normal either.
He
was very sheltered.
Yeah.
But other than that, one night I was, staying there long hours. I had my own apartment, but I am one of the few people that can say that Michael Jackson slept in my bed because he slept in my own room.
Yeah.
I was not in it at the time.
he wouldn't have wanted you in there. Maybe your brother, but anywho.
But we were sitting there and the Johnny Carson show came on, the Tonight Show, and I was reading a book and wrapped up in a blanket, and Michael was sitting in Daddy's rocker recliner, and Daddy was at his desk working, and Mom was in the kitchen doing what Mom does in the kitchen, and some singer comes on. I can't even tell you who it was or what song they were singing, but suddenly I hear Michael singing along, and it's over, and he said, well, they did a pretty good job with that, and I said, oh, obviously you know that song, and he looked at me and says, oh, yes, I wrote that song.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. Oh, sorry, Michael. Didn't know that.
That is cool. Oh, my God. Any other Michael Jackson stories?
I'm sorry?
Any other Michael Jackson stories that you recall?
Yes. The first time they came out to visit, Michael and his crew were doing a kind of a travelogue documentary of their big tour. And so they brought a film crew. He asked if they could bring a film crew out. So they did, and Daddy and Michael were sitting on the couch and with the chihuahua under Daddy's elbow, going through Daddy's scrapbook. And Tito and his wife Dee Dee were there, and his manager and his secretary and security and the film crew, just all of these people in Mother and Daddy's house. And it was one of those strange moments where, people had been whispering to each other while they were filming. It was one of those strange moments when everybody, for no apparent reason, got quiet all at the same time. And when that happened, Michael had flipped past a page, and then he went back to it and pointed to a photo, and he said, Spanky, where was that picture taken? And everybody kept listening, and Daddy said, oh, well, that was on the front steps of the first house we lived in when we moved to California. And, you could see the house number in the photograph behind him, but he called it out, whatever the number was, and I think he said something like Queens Avenue. And he said, yeah, and that was the first house we lived in when we moved to California. And Michael looked at him and said, really? About the same time that Tito kind of took a little gasp of air in, and Michael said, Spanky, that was the first house we lived in when we moved to California.
Whoa. Wow.
And then on one of the trips when Mother and Daddy went out to see Michael and stay at his home, they had made arrangements for them to go to that house and tour that house. Mother got to go with them. So we're hoping that we can recreate that when we go to California to do some more filming for our documentary. I hope we can talk to Tito and
also if the house is still extant and it's still there, go see it. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be cool. And we're looking, what's the timeline now projected for the finishing of a Spanky McFarland documentary?
Well, we hope to be able to start submitting to film festivals about this time next year. Right now, we're at the stage where we're putting together a kind of a fundraising video. I think what we're going to do is do a Kickstarter campaign for it. Because at this point, we're all financing it out of our own pockets, and our production people are doing this all pro bono. Hmm. But we're about to get to a point where we need, professional services, and we need licenses and things like that. So there are going to be some expenses involved in it.
And even submitting it on the festival circuit and the fees for that, and then having to go to the, I mean, that it costs, you know?
Exactly. It does cost. So hopefully within a couple of months, we're going to be launching our fundraising campaign and going, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get all of that set up so that we can start submitting film festivals about this time next year.
Well,
our goal. And whether we achieve it or not, you know, a lot of it's going to depend on our success with fundraising.
Sure.
But it should be a very, very interesting piece of film for people who have an interest in Spanky and the nostalgia and, you know, child stars in general, because he is one of the few from that era who was able to make the transition from child star to everyday Joe.
Good point. Well, I love the way that you have told us about his stardom, the years after, and again, what he taught you and helped you in your life, Betsy McFarland, and the way that you've been conducting your own life with your businesses, with the jewelry, now with the film as well, and with everything that you do. I hope you will keep us posted, both on how the film's doing and how you're doing, and the website, which is, by the way, thecolorofgone.com. The color, you gotta put the in there, thecolorofgone.com. And I just really want to thank you for being such a delightful. Okay, last question for Betsy McFarland. Did you, I'm sure you met him, do you have any stories or thoughts or memories about Hal Roach? He lived to 101 almost, so...
He was when he passed, absolutely. Never had the opportunity, unfortunately, to meet Mr. Roach. That was one of the big disappointments of my life, that I was never able to shake his hand and thank him for helping to create such wonderful memories for people all over the world, and for helping, you know, my father become... one of the few people in this world who is known internationally by one name. You know, you've got Cher and Spanky and, you know, Jesus. So
that's right. No, and actually, the other last thing I wanted to say is that Spanky got his name from a newspaper reporter, because people don't, again, you have to go on Wiki to find this out, that, you know, the name had nothing to do with being spanked or anything like that. It was, there was a adjective back in the day where if you had a child who was really smart and precocious, Spanky was an adjective to denote that. So some reporters saw Spanky McFarland when he was 2 or 3 on screen, and said, oh, there's a Spanky kind of a child, so there that came out of. But did you ever have a nickname? Did your dad ever call you something besides Betsy?
I'm not sure I want to share that with the world.
This is not another thing like your mother with the battery cane. What the? Come on. What?
No, not at all. My nickname was Betty Winpoo.
Betty? Winpoo?
Betty Winpoo, yeah. My middle name is Lynn.
Oh, Betty Lynn.
So it was Betty Winpoo, yeah.
Okay. Did the poo stand for anything in particular?
No, I think, you know, Winnie the Pooh was popular. I really have no idea. I mean, Daddy's nickname for Mother was Mama Baggy Water Pants, so, and it had nothing to do with water in her pants.
I would think not, nor poo in yours, one would hope.
Right, exactly. No, well, it was just a term of endearment.
Well, so, Betty Lynn Pooh.
He also called me his Dolly.
Oh.
That was a wonderful thing. As I had mentioned earlier, he was a huge Dixieland jazz fan and loved Louis Armstrong.
Ooh.
And when he had his nightclub, I was small enough, I wasn't in school yet, and I would sometimes go with him in the mornings to clean up the bar. You know, while he cleaned up the bar, I would just, you know, fiddle around and do what a 3-year-old does. But he would give me slugs for the jukebox, and any time I could, I'd drag a chair over and put a slug in the jukebox and play Louis Armstrong, Hello, Dolly.
Oh.
And Daddy would stop what he was doing and put me on his knee and sing Hello, Dolly to me. And that's absolutely one of my most cherished memories of my father.
Wow. Thank you for... I'm so glad I asked that. I'm so glad to have asked so many questions of Betty Lynn Pooh McFarland. who has been with us in the neighborhood. Again, much success with thecolorofgone.com and everything that you do. Thank you, Peggy Lynn Poo.
Thank you, Rabbi. Blessings on you and your family.
Shalom to you.